Hey guys, we're here with Benson Hoagland, and we're here at Opto 22 headquarters in Temecula, California.
That's right.
And we just had an amazing tour, so you guys are in for a really awesome video, and there's also a full-length podcast, which will be part of the Industry 4.0 documentary. Benson, what do you have to say?
Hey, we're just excited you guys could come by and take a look at what we're doing here. We're building tools for engineers and software developers to, imagine their dreams, and we make it all right here in Temecula. So as part of your Industry 4.0 road trip to go and actually see manufacturers, we're happy we could be a stop on your tour.
Awesome. It is really awesome to get it kicked off. And thank you, Opto 22, for also being a sponsor of the Industry 4.0 road trip. Doesn't change my opinion, doesn't change the content. It just makes the content possible. But they are really doing some cool things here. So stay tuned and check it out. Thank you, guys.
So my name is Benson Hoagland. I'm responsible for marketing and product strategy here at Opto 22. I've been with Opto since 1995, and prior to that I was with a distributor and a system integrator up in the Rocky Mountain area. So we focused a lot on food and bev, oil and gas, chemicals, a lot of different types of applications. And I was involved with Opto at that time as well as a distributor, and then went on to come work for Opto.
So we met just recently at the CSIA Executive Conference in May, and we had a chat as well. So thank you for inviting us out to get a tour of the facility and the first interview for the Industry 4.0 road trip documentary. So thank you.
Yeah, thrilled to be part of what you're doing. I follow your work. I think you're doing some really terrific stuff in our industry. It seems like more could be done in the social influencing area, particularly for industrial automation. We see it everywhere else, but I'd like to see more of it, of course, in our space. So thrilled with the work you're doing.
Yeah, and that's something that Opto has done well is the video content. I wanted you to talk a little bit about your guys' approach on that and the journey to get to where you guys are having a channel that's reaching hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, it's been a long journey for sure. When I came to Opto, a lot of it was about converting a lot of content over to digital. I mean, if you think back in the day, it was the 90s, and so we're moving everything from printed documents over to PDFs. And it just seemed to be a logical progression of moving as much of this information as possible to digital. And I'm a bit of a shutterbug myself, amateur photographer, whatever. And I get a kick out of it. So, we put together a program here to, try to shoot some videos, not anything like really in-depth or, high production value, but something that we could, tell the story. And this was back in the time when, YouTube was really just getting its start. The big one was Bright Cove. They were one of the largest video players out there. And so we did a whole series on our software products and introduction to our hardware products way back in early 2000s. And that was led primarily by our director of training at the time, Alexi Beck, who's is still on some videos that are on our website today. And then from there we progressed, we realized that we were onto something. It was hard to really measure the views. I mean, the tools were there to do so, but it was a little difficult. But the most difficult part was just people being able to view the content. It's nothing like it is today. Videos at every turn, on your mobile phone, on this, that, and the other, where back in the day it was much more difficult. You had plugins in your browser so you could see the video. It was very different.
I don't remember those days very much. But what would you say the biggest reason for digitizing that content library? Why push for that?
For no other reason than the ability to get it out everywhere it needs to be. I mean, everything travels so much more quickly. It's portable in a digitized format. And it's just a way to tell your story to a much broader audience than we've ever been able to do before. And so part of it is, telling the bigger part of the story. But there's also a real opportunity is when people see how things work, they tend to absorb that and learn from that much more than just reading some material or perhaps even listening. I think podcasts are wonderful as well, but sometimes seeing it in action it has a big impact.
The visual element.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You mentioned story a few times. Why? What is important about storytelling in industrial automation?
Well, you know, I think everything needs to have a story. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about a technical piece of gear or you're talking about perhaps a case study. For example, we've been doing case studies for 15 years where we go out on the road and bring the gear and set up the lights and show our customers using our products. But it isn't about us and our products, it's about them and what problems they solve. What's their story? And that's always the thing that is exciting for me to hear and be engaged in. I mean, you don't want to hear just the same old this product and that product. You want to know how, you know, what problems did people have and how did they approach that solution? What was the result of that? And then a lot about their business. I mean, we've done walnut growers, fish hatcheries, New Belgium beer up in Fort Collins, all kinds of different stories. And hearing them tell the story is what makes it exciting, not only for us as filming it and being able to weave our portion into it, but to anybody else who's listening.
So what would you say, like, is the story of Opto 22?
So that's a great question. The story of Opto is, you know, we're a band of engineers. We're just a small company based here in Southern California, which we love. And, you know, we just have a real passion for really unleashing the creativity within the minds of engineers, developers, and so on. And to do that, you've got to kind of have the right products, the products that will allow them to think outside the box and go after applications no one had thought of before. And so a big portion of what we do here is trying to build those tools, make them very accessible. You know, we don't charge for our software that's on our hardware. We provide free training. We provide free product support. Someone always answers the phone during working hours here. So it's really just, there's so much creativity and so much intelligence out there among the community that we offer our products to, and that of course is engineers, technicians, software developers, and so on. And it kind of brightens our day. It makes us feel good when somebody comes with an application they did and said, "Look what I did!" And they're like, "Yeah, they're way smarter than we are. We're just going to provide the tool set for doing that." So we're a manufacturer of hardware products, primarily controllers, input-output systems, or I/O systems. Some of the networking components that go with that. And then we have a suite of software that is designed to make those products, one, easy to use, but two, also allow people to do things they hadn't done before. And we're recognized for several firsts in the industry. You know, we came up with this notion of a little plug-in I/O module that fit on a rack and then connected to an IBM PC back in the 80s, which heralded, of course, PC-based control at the time. Then in the 90s, we took that same idea and put it in an industrial controller and had, you know, the Mystic control system. We're the first to bring Ethernet I/O to the industry. Back when a time when everybody else was saying, "We don't know what you guys are smoking down there in Southern California, but nobody's ever going to use Ethernet on the plant floor." Now, today, you can't buy a PLC without Ethernet. So a lot of those we helped found. In fact, in that room just 15 yards from here, is where the very first specification for the OPC spec was written. So we were one of the founding members for that. So we really have this engineering philosophy of trying to bring as much information technologies, IT technologies, into the OT side. And the reasons for doing that is, again, to provide a lot of flexibility in how you might tackle an application, have a lot of tools at your disposal, but still have the industrial, you know, packaging and reliability and mission critical capabilities that you would expect from an OT or operations technology device. So combining those two together really is what sets us apart from many of our competitors.
So you talked about your band of engineers, enabling engineers, mm-hmm. process engineers. What are some of those recent products that kind of embody that?
So probably the product we're most excited about, and it's only a year and 3 or 4 months old now, is something we call Groove EPIC, or Groove EPIC. EPIC is an acronym like PLC and so on. One that we did create to try to, again, embody what this new technology could bring. And it's an edge programmable industrial controller. So that's kind of our new thing that we've done. And the idea or the concept behind it is simply, you know, stepping a little bit back to that notion of IT and OT in one box. You know, we built it on a Linux operating system. We made it industrially hardened. It's minus 20 to 70, it's class 1 div 2. And, you know, it's all the things that it needs to be a controller. But at the end of the day, it's a Linux-based, ARM-based processor that literally whatever you can imagine, you can do with this thing. So it has traditional tools like CodeSys for developing ladder logic and function block diagram, you know, whatever the IEC 61131 package that you choose to use. Or you can write your own Python or C# or Java application and run it on this industrial device with real-time I/O. So again, if we can create a foundation or a set of tools or a hardware system that somebody can dream up whatever they want and run it on there, that's really what this product is designed to do.
Would you consider yourself, or would you consider Opto a hardware or a software company?
So that's such a terrific question, because we all know that for hardware to be successful, the software's got to be really, really good. So for us, we have both hardware and software engineers. In fact, I'd say we probably have hired more computer science majors in the last 10, 15 years than hardware guys. So, but you know, we have a lot of folks here who have been here a very long time working on both sides. And it's all done right here in this building in Temecula. So you know, we've got our hardware engineers working right next door to our software engineers, which of course is right next door to where we manufacture everything. So really, it's a combination of all of those things. But if you would ask somebody on the street, what do you know Opto for? They're going to tell you solid-state relays and I/O systems, in other words, hardware. But it's nothing without the software to make it run.
And then also, your go-to-market strategy is a little bit different than other hardware companies that actually charge for their software. Why don't you talk about?
Yeah. So you know, generally speaking, you know, as I said, I think the software is a key component, whether it's firmware or whether it's application software that runs on your PC, whatever. But too many times we see a lot of the vendors that have different profit centers. You know, they got to make profit on software, they got to make profit on training, they got to make. We don't look at the world that way. Our approach is to build world-class hardware. It's going to last forever, and then include the software necessary to actually use it. So the idea of us charging for our programming language just never washed right with us. And then further to that, we provide free support for that and free training, both online and at the factory. So, you know, it's about lending a hand and helping people you know, realize their own potential and dreams.
If only you can get the hardware to come for free, too.
Right? Yeah. Unfortunately, those physical things cost money. So we got, you know, but yeah, you're right. There's a lot of IP in the software as well. But as I said, it's not a profit center for us, not how we look at the world. But we do offer other software products that are charged for and are worth every penny. And an example of that is Inductive Automation's Ignition software. So, you know, we love Inductive. We think they're a terrific company. We think their head's in the right place. We're very like-minded companies. We're trying to, you know, you mentioned it earlier, we're a little different than other companies out there. We are, because we challenge a status quo, right? So we're not just going to do everything like everybody else does it. We're going to take a different approach and say, you know, what if we went in this direction instead of that direction where everybody else is going? And Inductive does some of the same thing. So this notion that they were able to build their software on open source Java, open source components along with Java, cross-platform, those things were all keyed right into us. And that cross-platform capability that Ignition is based upon allowed that software to run right on our hardware.
Do you have any message to Inductive?
Well, hey, we just love working with those guys. You know, again, we're a privately held company as they are in the state of California, and both have this dream of changing the industry in our own little way. You know, we're not out to be the biggest and the baddest or anything like that. We just want to evoke a positive impact on engineers and software developers that are trying to get things done and just help them get it done. You know, they have a thing that they say it's reducing the friction between you know, what somebody needs to do or what they want to do and how they get it done. And we have that very, very same philosophy. So we just want to grease the skids, make it easier, take those worries out of the way and just focus on changing the world.
What is Industry 4.0?
So it's a terrific term. Of course, this one was largely launched, if you will, in Europe. And we're worldwide. We have an office in Frankfurt, office in China. We do business around the globe. And so Industry 4.0 was pretty big in Europe for a while. took on a slightly different term here, more of a industrial Internet of Things, you know, again, kind of a modifier to the IoT. And I've been following the IoT for some time, and I did a TEDx talk on what is the Internet of Things back in 2014. So there's a lot of similarities between all of Industry 4.0, Industrial Internet of Things. And I think one of the ones that terms that it's even gaining some traction now as well is digital transformation. But under the Industry 4.0 umbrella, there's a lot of pieces and parts. But if you can distill it down to its basic element, it's this free availability, democratizing the data, right? Whatever data that might be, it may be coming from a business system or it may be coming from the factory floor. But this free exchange of this information reveals new insights on how a business can operate and or how it can be safer or it can perform better. And to me, that's what Industry 4.0 embodies. Is it's not, I don't run down to the store or talk to a vendor and buy Industry 4.0, right? It's an ecosystem of a bunch of like-minded products and vendors and so and integrators and end users to achieve a desired result. And that stems from this free flowing of communications and data.
With the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Look what the internet did for all of us. I mean, if you think about, you know, what it did for democratizing data locked away initially in college universities, right? Now dating way back again to Gopher and a number of other tools that have been out there. But yeah, absolutely. That's the same kind of net effect is what we're looking to do.
What is the inflection point for Industry 4.0?
So that's a great question. You know, it's tough because everybody's at a different level of their own transformation. Some are somewhat ahead of others, and for each of them, I think their inflection point was different. What it's going to be for our industry, you know, we tend to be in a very risk averse industry, industrial automation in general. Is very risk averse. So you're going to have a lot of the outliers out there trying to, you know, make it happen and notch out some, you know, really cool result or improvement or whatever it might be. And it's going to take a pretty significant amount of that to happen before others will start to jump on board. You know, the typical bell curve we've heard from, you know, Jeffrey Moore of the innovation curve or the, you know, there's all kinds of different theories about how that happens. So I'm not sure what the inflection point will be. I think there's some technologies that are helping move that inflection point closer. I'm very eager to see what happens with things like 5G. When you get to a point of ubiquitous communications where it can happen at any time, that's where things will change again. I think we already hit one to a certain degree, and that was the notion of mobile technology. This idea that in all of our pockets we're carrying a mini, you know, a supercomputer. I mean, we're talking about a processing capabilities that are 10, 100x of what put men on the moon. So, you know, that was a big one for all of us in this availability of information, right? I can pull out my phone, my smartphone, I can learn anything, right? So that is, again, about this free exchange of information. So how do we do that in automation or in industry and still abide by things like security and reliability and so on and so forth? Because those things are key ingredients for that Industry 4.0 inflection point to actually occur.
So I think, like, if we look at self-driving cars, for example, the inflection point might be when it's safer to drive a self-driving car than to not. Or, for example, in industry, it's costing you more money. Well, you know, it probably already is, but costing you more money, or it's less safe to not transform than it is to transform. So
that's
before, it's like, you know, beta testers would have issues, like, you know, they'd run into the problem, so they wouldn't want to, so it was safer to stay. But at some point, it's going to be more dangerous to stay where you're at.
And when you're living in the moment, sometimes that point is really difficult to see. And a couple of case in points, and these I mentioned in my TEDx talk as well. Manned flight. I mean, you don't think about even worrying about getting on an airplane today. Most people don't. But back in the day, nobody in their right mind would get on an airplane. Or even the automobile. Hey, my horse and carriage is doing fine. Why would I want, you know, this contraption that makes a lot of noise and so on? So, you know, the world changes. And it's those who stay up with those changes, or maybe are out in front of those changes, who will benefit very, you know, greatly from that. And I think that's where we're in this unique little spot right now, particularly for engineers and developers and again, technicians that are in the space today, is that world is changing, and they do, especially these younger engineers that are coming out of college today, they see the change, and they've had these tools at their fingertips over the past several years that have transformed the way they think and their expectations when they get into industry. I mean, the notion of a Raspberry Pi, right? This unbelievable computer that's a $35, you know, piece of equipment, but the stuff that they've been able to do with that and free their mind of whatever they want to, whatever they can conceive, they can run. So those are some of the pieces that I think are going to help lend itself, and they're bringing that. I think they're bringing change to our industry. They're saying, you know, we're not going to just put up with the, you know, old PLCs or standard way of doing things. There's new ways of doing things, and I think it's an exciting time.
Do you have any questions?
I want to know more about the Industry 4.0. I mean, so I'm excited about what you guys are doing, but what's your end goal? What are you trying to...
Well, what do you know of it so far, so I know how good of a job I'm doing at conveying it?
Well, all I know is that you're trying to bring awareness to Industry 4.0, and in a way that that the audience can I guess, more engage, right? And so that's the beauty of the road trip in my mind, right? Is this opportunity for you to go out and learn other people's stories and weave it into your own story about how Industry 4.0 is getting there. And you better be paying attention to it, because if you're not, you're going to be left in the dust. And there's plenty of folks in our industry that are just fine with that. I mean, either they're close to retirement or they really don't care so much. But we have a lot of people that do. And what you're doing to me is an outlet for them. It's a way of saying, you know what, this is real. You know what, I do see potential here. So that's where I see Industry 4.0 road trip being, making an impact.
Yeah, it's definitely, I've gotten compliments and critiques over my level of integration of like what's personal, what's business. To me, they very much are the same. This is a vacation for me as much as it is my passion, as much as it is my work.
Mm-hmm.
So very much just connecting, like actually seeing the process, you know,
right.
Seeing the process, talking to the people of the industry rather than looking at white papers. I think that is going to, like you said, allow more people to relate to it, more story.
We've got plenty of talking heads. I mean, let's be honest. We really do. There's a lot of spit and polish and fancy videos in this, and everybody trying to get the messaging just right and so on. And, you know, frankly, I don't think we need to do it that way. I think that everybody, especially in today's world and based on what I believe to be the audience that you're really going to be going after, these are the type of people that are used to consuming this kind of content in a very different way. Not from a... Not, this isn't the corporation talking, right? This is just... A guy.
Right.
He's running around the country and he's saying, hey, what are you doing? Hey, what are you doing? And how'd you do it? And what problems did you encounter? And how did you solve those problems? And who else might be able to benefit from what you're doing? That's what's, you know, that's what you don't have enough of.
That's what I'm trying to do. And, you know, as much as it is fun is for me to do it just in of itself, it's also fun seeing other people catch on and start implementing their own version of digital transformation or video content.
And I think that's an interesting point. The version of digital transformation, this is not cookie cutter. Okay, there's not a set of rules or steps that you do digital transformation. It's about bringing together the right tools for what it is you're trying to do. And those tools have to be appropriate for the person implementing whatever it is. So, you know, it's interesting because everybody's like, well, he's doing it this way or they're doing it this way. There's nothing wrong with that. That's awesome because we all learn from that. And then what you're doing is go around and say, well, he did it this way and they did it this way and they did it. And where's the commonality, right? What are the key pieces that made all that work? And that's what once that's revealed, then people have a better basis for how to start their own digital transformation projects if they haven't already gotten started.
Describe an example of machine learning and AI and how it would benefit an industrial process or, you know, use case.
So these are two nascent fields that I think are really exciting right now. The idea is pretty straightforward. It's the compilation of a lot of data and throwing it at, you know, very powerful computing algorithms that can make some sense of it. I mean, that's what all of this is anyway, right? So it's a lot of data points. In fact, I would argue most people are thinking it's too many data points. You know, we can't do anything with it, which I don't think is the case. I think when you start pulling together a lot of various data sets, then you start to recognize some various patterns between those. But we can't do all of those as human beings. That's where machines can help us try to derive some sort of, as we say, knowledge, or perhaps even at the top of the knowledge pyramid, the idea of wisdom. You know, where can we take this data from very raw data and make something useful out of it? And in machine building, in process, because the data points, there's so many of them, and it's very difficult to sift through all of that in a given run or a given week, whatever the time frame may be, to have some assistance in making sense of all that data and then popping out some basic results that a lot of us may not have even thought of is very interesting and exciting. You know, one of the things I've been following on LinkedIn and other places is, you know, what are some of the most popular fields of study today? And everybody's pretty much in agreement that data science is where things are going, because anybody who can take these massive data sets and turn them into something meaningful might be profitable, might be, do something to help the environment, it may be, you know, noble, whatever, it doesn't really matter. And what matters is that if people who can do that are part of the future in a big way. So I think it will have an impact. I think people are still trying to get their head around it, because, you know, it happens all the time in our industry and industry in general. These buzzwords start to come out, right? IoT, you know, machine learning, AI, cloud computing. And, you know, half the people run for the hills and half the others are like, what the hell are you talking about, right? So putting that into some sort of context, I think is important. So we've done some things with customers, and it's very, very early stages. But, you know, for one example is wind turbines. You know, being able to take a lot of information from various turbines about their operating parameters and so on, moving those to an ML algorithm of some sort, and be able to predict what will probably happen in the future based on these data sets. I mean, when you think about manufacturing itself, or even in the case of wind turbines and simply turning wind energy into electrical energy, you know, in each of these cases, it all becomes about how to minimize downtime, right? And that's one of the biggest things that plague our industry. You know, yeah, you can do all this great stuff, but how do we minimize downtime? How do we improve production? And we all try to figure that out every day. But if we can use machine learning or AI, well, for I think just for the obvious reasons that we want a better result at the end. I mean, anything that we do, whether it's eating right to doing something on the plant floor right, is for a better outcome. And I think in these cases, we're trying to figure out what pieces on the manufacturing floor and these types of technologies you just described, machine learning and AI, how these can produce a better outcome, safer, better product, you know, more secure, or to, again, you know, reduce or minimize or perhaps even eliminate, you know, downtime.
What drives you?
Oh, geez, I'm just a techno geek. I mean, this stuff just fascinates me. I mean, out of college, I started a computer business, and this is pre-internet. I mean, I know I'm dating myself, but this is early '90s. And a good friend of mine, he actually works for Rockwell Automation. He played guitar, I played harmonica, we played music together. Next thing you know, what do you do? I'm in computers, he was in controls. And he showed me this, it happened to be an Opto system, but he showed me this system where, you know, I could, in software, click a button on a screen and a motor would start. And for whatever reason, that fascinated me beyond all belief. And I was like, I want to know more about that. And I sold my computer business and I got into the controls business. And he and I did a bunch of stuff together. And it's always just been something that's fueled inside, you know, whether it's photography, whether it's flying a drone, whether it's building a computer. You know, for example, this weekend, I spent most of the weekend working on my home automation system. I mean, there's just the tinkering and getting, you know, for me to say, hey, Alexa, turn my house fans on. there's something really cool about that. And you know, those were two completely different systems, and how do I get them to work? And how do I write an application that allows me to do X, Y, or Z? And then try to convince my my wife to use it, which rarely happens. But
how would you define Benson? Who is Benson? Like, what is?
Yeah, just you know, that's a tough question. I've never been asked that before, so I'm gonna wing it here. I'd say just a guy who's really passionate about what I do. You know, I've heard it. I've actually heard it from you. I've heard it from others that, you know, living your best life is about doing something that doesn't feel like work, and in general, that's what we do here. I mean, there's so much passion and excitement about what we're doing and what we're trying to produce for our customers, for our integrators. I guess that's the thing that drives me, is, you know, to see somebody do something new and exciting. So for me, it's just it's being in the moment, right? And it's just,
it's
like
so
this. You're right. It is cliche.
What does that mean to you?
It means that everything that you're trying to do has purpose at some level, and it's driven by some inner desire to make some, you know, to evoke some change. You know, another guy that I follow is a guy, Simon Sinek. You know, and he loves talking about a myriad of things, but one of them is, you know, finding your why. You know, I think I found it. I think I found why I like to do this. It's something I enjoy coming to work every day and doing. I mean, yeah, are there parts or elements of the job that are less exciting than others? Absolutely. They're all like that. But at the end of the day, you know, you think you're making a difference, right? And that's where it gets back to, somebody came up with a great application or somebody solved this problem, and I may have had a little to do with the tools that enabled that to happen. That's exciting, you know. That's look back on it, and yeah, I mean, I look at you know, we talked a little bit about this earlier. You know, the idea that one of the best directors in the movies today, James Cameron, built a submersible to go to the deepest part of the world's ocean in this contraption that he conceived in his mind and had a team he built put together, and it ran on Opto. You know, and talk about mission critical, right? You're, you know, 37,000 feet, you know, you're deeper than Mount Everest is high. You know, if things go wrong, that's not the place you want them to go wrong. So the idea that somebody like him and many, many others that can, you know, realize their dreams, and this was a dream of his, and we were just a small part of it, but we were a part. And there was something that's like, you know what, that was cool. That was cool.
Industry 4.0 in one word.
Can I use a dash, a hyphen?
Sure.
Data democratization. Yeah, I think it's about the data at the end of the day. Now, obviously, you're going to do something with that data, but it starts there. And it's sometimes, like I said, real-world data that's coming still from sensors that were installed 20 years ago to cloud-based systems, and it's pulling all that together to achieve a better result.
You mentioned something earlier where, you know, you said some people might think that we have too many sensors or
too
much data.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which doesn't make a lot of sense at first. You're like, well, no, we could use all the data we want. We have unlimited cloud storage. The machine learning algorithms can consume it in seconds.
And sort through the good stuff and toss the, you know, the stuff that's meaningless.
Yeah. But at what point, you know, if you were defining, like, let's say every, you know, position and velocity of every particle in the observable universe, at what point does that data, you know, too much randomness, like, ends up just being noise, and then not enough, like, you know, entropy, and like, at what point does it become meaningless?
Right, and that's okay. Let's be clear. The fact that some data is rendered meaningless is okay. We get too hung up with, you know, well, we have all this data, we got to do something with it, and all of it has value. That may not necessarily be the case and needs change. For example, let's just take a look at IoT. You know, people wear these fitness devices, or, you know, they wear something on their heart rate monitor, or whatever. There's all these things that are collecting all this data. Now, do they use every ounce of that data at all times? No. But if something were to go amiss, you know, your heart beats a little differently and maybe sends an alert, now is the data worth it? In other words, we don't want to look at data necessarily in its totality, but we want to use that to help us understand what's happening around us or happening inside of us or whatever. So the absence of that data means you have no clue whatsoever. Just one day your heart stops. You know, but if I have data and I have a way of sensorizing, whether it's my body or whatever, and I can learn about things leading up to what could be a critical event and avoid it, now is the data worth it? I think it is.
What is your favorite part of the manufacturing process that you can share here at Opto 22?
The people who make it work. I mean, clearly, it's no company is all based on technology. We have folks that have been working out on the plant floor. Well, we just gave away 6 30-year watches this year. So, I mean, it's the people who make this thing tick, and they have their own passion about doing it right. But in terms of the just the cool tech out there, I think our surface mount machines are really pretty exciting. We started off with one of those 20 years ago, and slowly built it up, and it's just fun to watch those things operate. I hope you can get some footage of it and maybe take some of that high speed stuff so you can slow it down. But that's probably one of the more exciting things to see out there. But then, as I said, you just got everybody out there. It's got their job, and they do it, and they do it year in, year out, and it's great. Opto is a company of people who all have a purpose to be here, and it's pretty exciting.
If there's anything else you want to share, or
let me think.
Or something you'd want to say that you would know for sure would make it in the doc.
Right. Yeah. I was actually thinking about that this morning in the shower. I said, "Well, what would I say? What would I say?" I think I covered most of it. I think I covered most of it. It was just, it's really about, to us, it's just building the tools that allow people to realize their dreams. I mean, and maybe dreams is overstating it or cliche or whatever, but dreams come in a lot of different forms and factors. Yeah, sure. And one of them is just say, hey, you know what? I'm going to blow my boss's mind with how I just solved this problem. Hey, man, that's awesome. That's exactly where we want to be. Or it's the guy who came out with conceived a brand new product based on some things that we were able to help them do. We've got several examples of those. So it all comes in different flavors.
We're getting an interview and a tour here at the Opto 22 headquarters. So.
Hey, thanks for coming by, and you're always welcome. So anytime, it's nice to have you. I mean, I know you're somewhat local here in Southern California, so we're happy to support you guys in any way we can.
It's a great way to kick off the road trip, so thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's a wrap.
And that's going to do it for today, guys. Thank you guys for watching. If you guys liked it, hit the like button. If you didn't like it, hit the dislike button. Get subscribed for more Industry 4.0 content. And Benson, what do you want to say?
Hashtag Opto22. I mean, thanks for coming by and checking out what we're doing. And if you have questions, we always answer the phones here. So give us a ring.
Thank you, guys. Peace out.